Journey Church is a community and movement, a fellowship of discovery. We desire to love well and serve often, while together we explore the adventurous love story of Jesus.
Well, welcome to the Journey Church. It's great to have you with us. My name is Jamie. I'm one of the pastors here, and thank you, Caitlin and Band. It's that statement that we belong. And the truth is, I think, at the center of all of our hearts, when we pause long enough to listen, it's really one of the questions we're asking. Where do I belong, and am I truly loved? And of course, the story of God is a great love story. We started our church about 10 or 11 years ago, and early on we figured we needed to identify what are the deep values of our church, and so we framed them up as imperatives. We had four, we've added a fifth, so we now have five imperatives for the journey, and this is our last Sunday in this series, so we're going to talk about this last additional imperative, and it's called celebration. And I'm anxious to talk about this because to me, it's something, I'll be honest with you, that sometimes I have trouble with. I'm pretty good at reflecting and contemplating, but celebrating, well, that seems to be a practice unto itself. Well, the story of God, if you're familiar with the Bible at all, this is an anthology of books, but it's broken out into two grand categories, an Old Testament and the New Testament. In the Old Testament, it's the story of a nation. The Jewish people, the Israelite people. God selected a people, chose them out of his sovereignty and said, I'm going to tell the story of love through you. Start with a man called Abraham. That's why the Jewish people call him Father Abraham, the father of a nation. And then through those Jewish people, God would actually send himself, his son, wrap himself in flesh, would arrive on the planet and would do redemptive work. There's this long philosophical, theological background to this. But basically, that would go, I will come rescue the people because they need rescuing, and I will give them a way to be known deeply by me and experience abundant life. In that second part of the story, that transitions into what we call the New Testament. And in the first four books called the Gospels, you have this arrival on the scene of the Son of God, who we call Jesus. And Jesus then teaches, dispenses wisdom, and sets up a plan whereby he would invest into the lives of his followers, and his followers would then invest into the lives of others. And this was meant to perpetuate itself all the way until he returns. So that's the spot we're in, by the way. Not just the Jewish people, but now there is an availability for connection with God for all people, and we can engage that. We've been invited into it, and so not only has that been poured out, someone at some point told you about God, and you and I then get to carry this same responsibility to tell someone else, to keep this moving. Somewhere in all of this, we find what's called celebration. And I believe there's a progression. In the Old Testament, God is interacting with one of the original Jewish leaders, a guy named Moses. And he's directed by God to lead the children of Israel into a yearly routine of reflection, sacrifice, and celebration. Now, this happens for the Jewish people through feasts. They're called festivals, or feasts. There's seven of them. In the New Testament, when Jesus arrives, we actually hear quite a bit about the feasts because they're happening and Jesus is engaged in them. For instance, one of the feasts is Passover. Well, what makes it really interesting by the time you get to the story of Jesus is he's not only participating in the feasts, but he's actually fulfilling them. This whole thing that was happening in the Old Testament was a foreshadowing. It was this great literary piece, in some ways for us who are now reading the story, to go, oh, wait a minute, this was this grand setup. Jesus comes and he actually fulfills the feasts are actually about him. He's walking around them, participating in them, and all this, and it's actually about him. Which, it's a fascinating study if you just want to go study the seven feasts and how they relate to who Jesus is. That's a story for another time. You're going to have to do that one on your own. But I just wanted to give that to you as a setup to say, celebration is a part of our heritage. It's meant to be woven into the fibers of who we are. Even people who don't believe in the Bible or study God's Word have this intuitive sense that we're meant to celebrate something. Typically, once a year, there's a human being in the family, and you make a cake, and you have streamers and birthday balloons, and you give gifts, and what do? You celebrate the day that person arrived on the planet. We call it a birthday, and we have a birthday party. We have a celebration. We have this strange cultural celebration that happens tonight where a team in the Northeast celebrates often. Celebrations happen in culture. We know that celebration's supposed to happen. But why do we sometimes miss it? Why is it actually not woven into the rhythms of our lives? Why are there times where maybe we've even been invited to a celebration, but you're not very celebrative? That actually you're at the party, and you're like the negative cloud in the corner. And maybe the party's about you. Why? What's the thing? What's the obstacle? Why do we have trouble? The fact is, God is saying to us there is good news of great love spilling out over the earth if you would but have eyes to see. And Jesus uses that phrase, a favorite verse that I love to quote, because to me it's this great contrast of the difference of living with God or living without him. Is a verse, Jesus speaking, John 10:10, he says this: there's a thief, there's a villain in your story, and he's coming. He's coming to steal, kill, and destroy. It's progressive. It kind of starts subtly. He steals from things. He steals your joy, for instance. But then, with the absence of joy, your life starts to really die and fall apart. And ultimately, you'll wind up in destruction if something doesn't change. The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But I'm here for a different reason. I haven't come here to condemn you. I've come here to give you an abundant life. There is this great abundance of which you're meant to tap into. I am good and full of goodness, and the goodness of God is everywhere if you would but have eyes to see. So joy is founded in a recognition of God's goodness. We might call that gratitude. So I don't know what kind of state of being you walked in here this morning. I don't know if you came in today and you go, I'm in this really great place, and I would consider myself as a person who is carrying with them a spirit of gratitude. As a matter of fact, while I was walking over here with my wife or driving over this morning, I was spilling out how thankful I was about the goodness of God. You maybe you walked over here and that was not your state of being. Instead, you walked over here and you were really frustrated, or there was a great deal of complaining, or maybe you were just numb to everything that was happening in life. How do we enter into a spirit of gratitude and understand that gratitude somehow leads to joy, and joy perpetuated always ends in celebration? If you are full of joy, you will celebrate. You can't not. It's this natural compulsion. Now, joy is an elusive thing. It's hard to hold on to it. And we'll get to that in just a second. But I thought, what could I give you that might be really practical to help you depending on where you are today? So let me give you a progression, pathways to get to celebration. Number one, first, we have to pause. We have to slow down long enough. Reflection gives birth to gratitude. You'll never be thankful if you don't stop and slow down long enough to see what there is to be thankful about. Now, you might be here today and you go, Mike, Jamie, and I hear you talking about being thankful, but honestly, I ain't got a lot to be thankful about. Well, if you feel like you don't have much to be thankful about, peel it back. Take it down to least common denominator. I do this all the time. Are you currently breathing? Start there. Step number one, and you're on your way to gratitude. If you can get there, and you can start to have this sense of being like, yes, okay, I recognize that good thing, and the sun came up, I suppose that's good. I like the color blue. Thank you, God, for blueness. If you can get there, start to get to some kind of gratitude, but you're going to find that something happens. There's a natural compulsion that follows gratitude. If you can actually get to a spirit of gratitude and thankfulness, you'll find you'll want to thank someone. Maybe it's God. Maybe it's another person. I breakfasted with a guy just this past week. He's an artist, and he said, he goes, hey, I got to show you something. He goes, it's crazy. You and I are having breakfast this week. But he goes, I got this text from your son this morning. I was surprised my son was even awake. And he said, look at this. And he slid it over to me. And one of my sons had just sent him a text that said, hey, thank you for what you do. I've been inspired by the way you love God. And he goes, I can't tell you what that meant to me. He's like, and your son wrote that to me. Like, oh, for my son, something was happening. He was listening to his music or whatever. And he just felt this sense of like, I think I want to say thank you. So he just sent him a little thank you. Like, when you feel thankful about something, there's a compulsion. It's a way of finishing off the enjoyment. That's what we call praise, by the way. But that begins to lead you towards celebration, because you know what happens? After you're active, see, saying thank you, showing appreciation, now we begin to serve one another. We're beginning to share the abundance, the fullness of God. You know what happens when you begin to share that and you realize, I'm giving this away. We're connecting with the rhythms of God. You might even have the chance to see how much someone else appreciates it. You know what starts to bubble up? A sense of joy, a sense of goodness, and an inner confidence. Wait, I tapped into something that was good and passed it along. And you know what happens when you start to feel joyful? When the sense of being is joyful, not just a moment of happiness, not just a brief experience of satisfaction, but you start to feel something at a deeper level. It's transcendent. It's this sense of peaceful confidence. God is really good. And you can't help it, but this smile kind of slides across your face. Now, quick, just make sure I'm talking. When I'm talking about joy, you get what I'm talking about at a deeper level. Joy is not necessarily somebody who's super bubbly and says bless their heart all the time. That's not necessarily, maybe that's joy, maybe that's just disassociative and they never look at the deeper things of life and they're very, very shallow. That could be too. That's not what I'm talking about. Not just someone who's just, oh, it's this sense. Now, there is outward expression. There is sometimes a clapping on the back and a two-handed handshake and a gregarious hug and a smile. Sometimes it is like that because there's something inside. And you know what happens? When somebody does shake your hand and put another hand and shake you vigorously, you know what they're doing? They're celebrating life. What you're feeling is an energy of celebration. And sometimes that spills out into a gathering and a party and a meal and something else. But what you're starting to feel a celebrative spirit. God is so good, I can't help but talk about him. And this is what God's called us to. If we fail to meditate on the goodness of God, we will fail to recognize his generosity. And we get lost in our problem of what we think should and shouldn't happen. Let me give you an important life principle. And then I'm going to give you a story that I think just summarizes this whole thing. Life is happening for us, not to us. For some of you, maybe you were on your journey and the path was pretty clear and you were actually, it was a nice, healthy pace, you were feeling good about it, you were taking in the beauty of the trees and the splendor of the grass, and you knew what God was calling you to and where you're going, it was lovely, and then suddenly a piece of the mountain broke off and tumbled through and destroyed all the pine trees on its way and stopped dead in your path, and you went, whoa, what is happening to me? God, I don't understand this. The path was clear. You had a calling. I was enjoying the beauty. And we get frustrated and angry. Something happened to us rather than recognizing, wait. Maybe that thing is for me. Maybe I was meant to stop because what I didn't see on the other side was a beast that was waiting to devour me. What I didn't understand was that I needed to learn some rock climbing skills for later on. I needed to learn the power of chiseling. I actually needed to go around this obstacle because I was going to interact with a different species of flowers that I'd never seen before, and it might be helpful because I might suddenly learn that this herb was going to provide healing for later on down the journey. If we can understand that every problem is actually an opportunity for God to carve out holiness in us, for him to reveal something about his character and about who we are. The people in your story that God has placed there or perhaps allowed there, they're like actors on a stage. He's placed them in yours, or maybe placed you in theirs, to play roles that facilitate friction, that display contrast, that create awareness. And if you don't believe me, get married. It takes courage to be married to someone who sees you 24/7. And the rub and the friction of seeing, you kind of want them to be some other person sometimes, and they want you to be some other. And they're not there, and they're clearly on a journey, and so are you, and you live in the tension of that. And God's using the friction of marriage. Sometimes it's glorious and wonderful and romantic, and it's everything you dreamed it would be. And sometimes it's not. And God's revealing something about yourself, and he's showing you something about his character. Life is happening for us, not to us. And I'll pause right here for just an important takeaway, because maybe one of you is there right now, and this is an important thing. You just need to ignore the rest of the message. What is life's current challenge meant to be teaching you? Maybe that's the message for you today. A boulder fell off a piece of the mountain, and it is an impediment on the way. And you need to stop there, and you need to stay on that imagery, and you need to go for a journey with God, and you need to ask, what is this challenge meant to be teaching me? Because it's meant to be teaching you something. We are called to go on a journey of gratitude. So here's the progression. Number one, the first pathway to celebration, if the goal is to get to celebration, the first pathway is reflection and gratitude. The second pathway is action. It's staying in motion. It's serving. It's not hiding. It's not staying paralyzed. It's staying in motion. Spirit-filled activity leads to joy. And it's cyclical. For the only way to maintain joy is to give joy away. This is one of those great spiritual paradoxes. If you want to keep joy, you have to keep giving it away. If you try and hold on to it and give it to no one, it'll be gone. I think this progression, these pathways, and how we get to celebration, starting with reflection, knowing that we have to stay in motion, spirit-filled activity, etc. I think it's captured beautifully in a parable that Jesus taught. Now, you may have heard this parable before, because we often use this parable to talk about gifts and talents and abilities. And it's a good parable for that, because certainly that's involved. But especially in the back end of the paragraph, because the front end is a bit of a contrast for the back end. It's in some ways even kind of a setup. When you see the absence of, it's really stark and really powerful. And in order for us to really see what it means to celebrate, I thought this parable might capture it better than any. So let's give it a shot. Matthew chapter 25, verses 14 through 30. Jesus is telling the story. Again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. He called together his servants and entrusted his money to them while he was gone. Quick backdrop. In those days, the Israelite nation had been conquered by the Roman Empire. And so if you, the Roman Empire was a republic, if you wanted to speak on behalf of something, you wanted to lobby something, you wanted to plea on someone's behalf, or you wanted to try and start a new business, you often had to go to the capital. You had to head to Rome to try and effectively move something forward. So it was not unusual at all that great business owners would leave, head to Rome, trust their business with someone trustworthy. This is important. What happens? In this case, this master's heading off out of town, and he's trusting his servants. He's saying, I see something in you. I believe in you. So I'm going to leave this with you. I'm going to leave this in your hands. Now, by the way, the other thing that's happening here, this story is told at the back end of Jesus' ministry. Here's someone's leaving and empowering someone else with a gift, and they're meant to give it away and invest it on his behalf. It's also a picture of us in the church. Jesus was about to go die. All right, so he gave 5 bags of silver to one, 2 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing it in proportion to their abilities. And then he left on his trip. This is important. He was saying, I see this ability, but this might be too much. I'm going to have to give you this. And for you, I think the place you're at in your maturity is this. For you and your skill set, I think you're able to handle this. He entrusts 3 different amounts based on how he sees who they are in proportion to their abilities. From the master's perspective, the servant who received the 5 bags of silver began to invest the money and earned 5 more. Pretty good return on his investment. The servant with 2 bags of silver also went to work and earned 2 more. Way to go. But the servant who received the 1 bag of silver dug a hole in the ground and hid the master's money. After a long time, their master returned from his trip and called them to give an account of how they had used his money. Now, I need to set the stage for this, because this is the tone. Picture the master comes back from the long trip, the caravan arrives, the camel's parked out front, horse, whatever, the beast of burden, and he walks in, and his coat or his large cloak or fur, whatever. The servant, you know, takes it off and hangs it in the thing, and he goes to the water pouring out of the side of the wall or whatever the nice thing, and he washes his hands, cleans up. How's everything going? Oh, everything's great, master. This has been good. You know, the taxes went up a little bit. That's a bummer. He's kind of catching up. He's come back from the long journey. He's like, hey, look, one of the things I want to do right away, well, first of all, I'm hungry, so we got to make some food. Matter of fact, like, let's just feast. You know what? Get a band. Let's party. I'm home. It's so good to be home. And my people, I know they got skills. I want to celebrate with them because I got a feeling they just crushed it for me in some business deals. So calling the guys, I want to hear what happened while I was gone. Let's get ready to celebrate. There's this anticipation. He believes in them. He trusts in them. So the servant to whom he had entrusted the 5 bags of silver came forward with 5 more and said, Master, you gave me 5 bags of silver to invest, and I earned 5 more. Way to go. Oh, I knew I saw something in you. I knew there was a lot of potential. The master was full of praise. Well done, my good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in handling this small amount. Now I'm going to give you more responsibilities. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Let's celebrate together. Way to go, man. Like, dude, I knew this guy had it. Did you see it? Let him do some more stuff. Give him some more money. Like, cart the silver over, because I knew he would crush it. He did. Who's next? Who's next? The next guy comes in. The servant comes in, who had received the 2 bags of silver, came forward and said, Master, you gave me 2 bags of silver to invest. I've earned 2 more. The master said, oh, I knew it. You too. Look at the potential. You should marry my daughter. Like, way to go. Like, well done, my good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in the little things. We're going to do some more for you. So you're living in the condo. How about a house? Help this guy. I just love what he's doing. Great stuff with that. I like the one investment. That was good. Apple. Let's remember that. And so let's go celebrate. Harry Connick flew in. The band is about to kill. Like, it's going to be awesome. Way to go. I just love these guys. Bring in the third guy. Third guy walks in. He's got 1 bag. It's a little dirty. So that's the image you have to have in your mind, because the beat changes in the story a little bit right here. Then the servant with the 1 bag of silver came and said, Master, I knew you were a harsh man. Now, by the way, did you catch all the words in this preview? Well done, my good and faithful servant. Master was full of praise. Hey, you've been faithful. I entrusted you with the money. Let's celebrate. You get all these tones. You get the character that's being described in the master. I knew you were a harsh man. Harvesting crops you didn't even plant. Gathering crops you didn't cultivate. You stole everything you got. I was afraid I'd lose your money, so I hid it in the earth. Look, here's your money back. In the NIV, the tone is this: here is what belongs to you. Everything comes to a halt. And there's this tone that suggests the master doesn't deserve what he has, let alone should he have more. It's almost as if the servant is going, I don't think you should even have this, let alone me invest it for you to make more. You don't deserve what you've got. There is an anger. There is self-interest. There is a frustration. There is jealousy and envy. Lloyd Ogilvie, who is a pastor in Hollywood, California, says this: because we cannot be spectacular, we refuse to be significant. We wanted 5 bags. We wanted a hit song. Why didn't my song go number one? Why didn't I get the stock tip? Why didn't my business grow like their business grew? Why can't I have children like they have children? Why can't I get married the way she got married? Why this is disproportionate. Because we cannot be as spectacular as we believe we should be, we fold our arms, we run off, we take our ball home, and we say, I won't be significant. Ogilvie says, we refuse to be significant in our assigned realm. You were just assigned 2 bags for now. You were just assigned 1 bag for now. Just invest what you have where you're at. Plant. I've planted you here. Grow where you've been planted. It's not this servant. There's a refusal. There's a blaming. There's judgment. There's a reaction. And this is what happens. Ogilvie says, soon we blame others, we blame conditions, or we blame our circumstances. He says it's a dangerous thing to stifle holy ambition. And boy, you feel the change in the story right here. Verse 26, but the master replied, you wicked and lazy servant. Whew. This is not the picture of Jesus like with a woolly lamb around his shoulders looking like Keith Green. Like this is a different image. So, like right here you have this direct voice of discipline, strength. And the master says, you wicked and lazy servant. And there's a pause. He even kind of acquiesces. Let's just say I had just inherited my money. Let's just say I did it through deception. If you knew I harvested crops I didn't plant and gathered crops I didn't cultivate, it was still money. Why didn't you put it in the bank? At least I could have gotten some interest on it. And he's driving home the point. He's exposing his motives. The truth is there's not the tiniest hint of devotion or loyalty with you. You are not seeking my good in any way. You are not looking out for me. You are only looking out for you. This is a picture of the servant being paralyzed by fear and judgment. I might lose this. I might not be good enough. All my insecurity is up because I should have got 5 and I didn't. I should have got 2 and I didn't. So since I only got 1, apparently I'm not good enough. I better not even use that. And you know what? You know whose fault this whole thing is anyway? It's your fault. This is when you see it really get sick and twisted. He blames the master for his inactivity. The judgment goes on the master. The master has entrusted him. He's given him a gift. He's given him a bag of silver. He's trusted him with something. And the lazy servant blames him on his inactivity. Verse 28, and the master ordered, take the money from this servant and give it to the one with 10 bags of silver. This is one who I know. This person knows how to handle abundance. To those who use well what they are given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away. Look, even people who don't believe in the Bible recognize this biblical principle. If you don't use it, you lose it. Disregard your potential, and it will be taken from you. Have you ever met somebody whose life just starts to shrivel and they're complaining and their negativity and their world just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller and the opportunities somehow aren't there anymore and they keep shrinking and shrinking and shrinking? This is a life principle. Verse 30, now throw this useless servant out into the outer darkness. He's not going into the brightly lit banquet hall celebration. No, throw him into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And when you hear that phrase, weeping and gnashing of teeth, it's always referring to hell. This man is allowed to have everything he wants. You want your negativity, you want your judgment, you want your fear, you get to have it. Go and live your hellish existence. And it's interesting, the master dealt out punishment according to the servant's idea of what he was like. Meditate on that this week. You are a harsh man. Okay. I'll let you experience harsh. Now, what do we know is Jesus continues to tell stories, and what, of course, Jesus is about to do the next week. He's about to go suffer, be sacrificed for love on a cross. See, the scandal of grace is even this servant in the deep, dark, outer darkness, all the servant has to say is, I'm sorry. I surrender. I don't want me. I want you. From the darkness to the light. And his face goes from shame to radiance. That's the scandal of grace. That even when we reject, even when we judge, God says, I'm still actually pursuing you. I'm still here. Even in the face of your rejection, I'm about to go to the cross and die for you. Father, forgive them, for they don't even know what they're doing. The Apostle Paul says in Romans, but God demonstrated his love toward us even while we were yet sinners, thrown into the outer darkness, he died for us. This is not a tragedy. If it ends here, it is. But the potential for grace and rescue and redemption, it's flooded throughout this book. Jesus tells the story to go, if you want to complain, if you want in your cynicism to gripe and hold on and control, I'll give it to you and see what surrounds you. But if you want to find freedom, if you want joy to spill out over your soul, then celebrate my goodness. Don't talk so much about what's not working. Celebrate my goodness and see what finds you. Abundance will follow. Like a magnet, it will come. Enter the banquet hall. Play the music. Dance. Feast. Cheer. And like the psalmist, proclaim the goodness of God. Because I think this is a man who experienced the outer darkness. I will extol the Lord, Psalm 34. I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise now, I've learned my lesson. His praise will always be on my lips. Instead of pointing out what's not working, his praise will always be on my lips. My soul will boast in the Lord. Let the afflicted, people who are like me, let them hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. Something happens when we enter this abundance and give it away. I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. This poor man called, and the Lord heard him, and he saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him. And when you hear fear, hear wonder. Those who wonder, those who are in awe of his goodness. The angel of the Lord encamps around those in awe of his goodness. He delivers them. Taste and see that the Lord is good. You don't even have to swallow. You don't even have to gulp it. Just taste it and it will start you down the path of gratitude. It will lead you to celebration. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Fear the Lord, you his saints. For those who fear him lack nothing. The lions may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. The goodness is around you. Come, my children, listen to me. And I will teach you the fear of the Lord. A Psalm of David. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you that you invite us into your family. And while we know that we're servants, even slaves, because our life has been purchased with your blood, we are also children. We're also your kids. We somehow carry the flair of royalty. We are princes. There are princesses in this room who find their identity in another kingdom in a different way, in your family under your name. Father, we confess that it's so easy to be cynical. It's so tempting to complain. And yet the abundant life surrounds us. You are truly good. Give us eyes to see, ears to hear. And would we, as we recognize and acknowledge and speak out that goodness, would we find joy, and would that joy find its way into celebration? God, I want that to be the tone of my life, that I'm celebrating. That there's an energy about me that just can't wait to talk about something amazing you're doing. And if someone mentions a tree, can I point to a forest of pine and aspen and birch? And if someone mentions a bird, can I reference the colors and the symphony of sounds? When someone talks about a star, would I say there's not just one, but there are galaxies and solar systems? And this is a generous God I serve. God, collectively as a church, would you give us eyes to see and ears to hear? Would we walk in your goodness and this abundance, and would we give it away? And might someone be sitting in a community of believers somewhere in this town or another part of the world next week or 20 years from now because one of us passed along the goodness. Thank you, Father, for the endless pursuit, the scandal of grace, the intensity of your love. Find us as your obedience.